Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
We are back on this Wednesday episode. We are continuing the conversation of between Gurney and Paul in the canyon.
And Chani is shushing.
Yes, Chani
nonstop.
Just got done shushing. Of course, this is minute 92 through 93 of Dune Part 2. And it picks up with Gurney continuing after his revelation that Paul only has 200 men.
Yeah.
And he says, incredible fighters. Duncan said there were millions of them. So shout out Duncan Idaho mentioned.
Shout out. Rest in peace, my boy. Never coming back ever again. Yep,
it's too bad. We'll never see him again.
Never.
Much less thousands and thousands and thousands of times. What a shame.
Okay. Quick sidebar, because I know we got a lot to get through for the rest of this week and everything, but how far do you think they're going to go with the movies? Do you think they're going to stop with children?
I don't know. I think if anything...
They're not going to do Heretics in Chapter House, for sure.
I'm teetering on hope and fear here.
Yeah.
So I would love for them to, after the main motion pictures are done, which I think there should just be the three that we know of right now.
Do a God Emperor anthology series on HBO or something?
Yes. I think it needs to move over into the storyline series, like storyline shows.
Yeah.
But my fear is that we get the Star Warsification of this, and it becomes every little side character gets their own series, which is fine.
Does every Duncan get their own side own series?
I mean, Jason Momoa has a meal ticket for the rest of his life.
Well, that's the other question, is how long do you think Jason Momoa wants to fucking be Duncan fucking Idaho?
I know, right? Know? So, I mean, I don't know. I think we'd get one or two more good series out of it.
Yep.
And then we can start doing different spinoffs if the market is there for it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be there for it, and that's fine.
Yep.
I would rather Dune have a good run instead of just be spread out.
Agreed.
And which I know kind of goes counterintuitive to what we've said about more Dune is always good, but
well, every time we've said that, there's been and people can't see the show notes, but there's been a little asterisk beside it.
A big asterisk. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I would rather a quality over quantity.
Yeah.
Situation. And we don't even know what the quality of the third movie is going to be.
I would hope it's going to be great. Speaking of, some timely news to date this episode.
Mm-hmm.
We know that it is called Dune Part 3.
Cowards.
Cowards. Call it Messiah. Call it a jihad.
Son
of a bitch.
I don't know, man. I mean, there's... Yeah, sure, it's just following the naming convention of the first two, but... Ugh.
And, like, is Messiah a follow-up? Yes, but there is also a 12-year gap. It's pretty well, like, its own encapsulated story that has a good, like, leave-off at the end.
Yep. Yeah.
Just call it Messiah. Call it Messiah.
Ah, well,
Dune Messiah. Because calling it Part 3, people aren't going to get the fucking point. And the whole reason that Frank wrote Messiah was because people didn't get the fucking point.
I agree. I don't know if... I mean, I hope we can talk about this with some other members of the community in more depth before the movie comes out.
Yeah.
But... I don't know how much of the messianic storyline they're even going to put in the movie. I can 100% see them I can 100% see them just rewriting it as a conclusion to Paul's story.
Don't do this to me.
I'm happy to be wrong. I want to be wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of how movies get made to basically be a general audience, palatable to the general audience, what I'm trying to say. And while the messages in Messiah are important and they're good, I don't know if that's something that is exactly palatable.
Or that Hollywood wants to incur the wrath of a fucking fascist regime over.
Sure.
Fucking hell.
Anyways, we will dedicate a lot more time to talking about that in the future.
Unrelated. Well, related because it's in Messiah. I'm very excited to see what they do with the Stoneburner.
I would hope that it's in there.
I mean, it has to be.
I think so. I think it does, yes.
You can't tell Messiah without blinding Paul.
Agreed.
Like,
I agree, but there's also, we've had this conversation about a number of things.
I mean, you could say that you couldn't tell Dune without fucking Alia being here, and, you know, she's kind of here, but not in the way that I would have wanted her to be here.
Sure.
Especially with Tim Blake Nelson playing a three-year-old with a cleft lip lisp.
He's got the range. He can do it.
Was it a cleft lip or was it just a lisp? I don't remember. I think it's a cleft lip.
I can't remember.
Anyways, so back to this minute.
Back to the minute. Gurney said, Duncan said there were millions of them. And Paul confirms as much, but he specifies, yes, in the Deep South.
Yeah. And Gurney keeps pushing, and he's like, why aren't you... Essentially, what the conversation boils down to is, you have the manpower, and you're not capitalizing on it. What the fuck, you bitch? And at this point, you know, Chani doesn't shush him again, but she turns around and gives him, like, fucking daggers.
Yeah.
Full-on claymores for eyes. Just shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and this is really the root of Chani's demeanor for the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Like we talked about the other day with Gurney's single-mindedness.
He doesn't know the transformations that have happened inside of Paul.
Right. And Paul tries to, convey in so many words what is going on, but just Gurney's not getting it. Right. Because Gurney asks Paul after he gets the claymores for eyes, the scimitars for eyes, as it were, whatever sword you want to insert here, because we're beyond daggers. Gurney asks him, what are you so afraid of? And Paul's response is, worship, Gurney.
Yeah.
They used to be friends, now they're followers.
Yeah.
Gurney, still not getting it, is just like, Muad'Dib the prophet, why is that a bad thing? Use it.
Yeah. He's still very much in, like, I called it colonizer mindset.
Yeah. Rightly so. I mean, that line, Muad'Dib the prophet, why is it a bad thing? Use it.
Yeah.
That is like...
He's Atreides first mode.
Yep.
He thinks that the only storyline going on here is the Atreides need to get back at the Harkonnens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take a good amount of convincing to get him out of this.
And he won't get out of it. That's the thing.
He does in the books eventually, but it takes a lot.
Sure. In the movie.
Movies, no.
No.
He's full on avenge Leto, kill Raban. That is his two goals.
Raban.
Paul just, after this, is casually drops the bomb that he's clairvoyant now. He's just like, by the way, I can see into the future.
Spice opened my mind. I did some fucking DMT. Have you ever done DMT before?
And we get a hard cut to his earlier vision of the people just wasting away in the desert heat.
It's a very brief hard cut. It's just very like brief. Flashes of it.
Yeah, yeah. And he says, if I go south, all my visions lead to horror. Billions of corpses scattered across the galaxy, all dying because of me. And Gurney responds with, because you can't control it?
Because you lose control.
Oh, sorry. I was reading both of my lines at the same time. Gurney responds with, because you lose control. And then Paul says, because I gain it, which is a...
Yep.
Stone cold. Stone cold, but good. good explanation of what's going on here.
It's, I think, you know, as much as we were criticizing the writing of Dune and everything minutes ago.
Well, that was one side of my mouth, and I'm going to talk about the other side of my mouth now.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, this is the part of this movie where they are, you know, becoming very overtly, Paul is not a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yep. Yeah. I still think they could have done a hard, like, stare down the barrel of the camera to the audience and go,
the hardest fourth wall break. I'm a fucking genocidal asshole.
Yeah. Just to make sure we get it.
Yeah.
I would not have been upset with that. So we get one more really worried look from Chani. She's concerned about what this new piece on the board is going to influence Paul.
And rightly so, because it is a man that Paul has a lifelong relationship with, mm-hmm. who has so much sway over Paul's thinking and decision making.
And motives that are diametrically opposed to what they're doing.
Yep. And we're not going to talk about that at all at any point in the next 2 to 7 days of episodes. Why would we do that?
So after this really worried look, we cut to the open desert again.
Mm-hmm.
And Gurney is having a real, real tough time with his tent. He's trying to get it situated, and he's floundering, man.
Yep. It's poor buddy.
Yep. He does not know the ways of the desert.
No.
And we kind of get this little air hiss to close out the minute. And that's it cuts off right there. So this is very different from Book Gurney.
Okay.
Book Gurney kind of just fits. He doesn't fit in with the Fremen culture, but he fits in with the practices just fine.
He doesn't wear his still suit slip fashion at the ankles, though.
They don't specify. So what we do get from the books is a meeting between him and Stilgar that is not really fleshed out in the movie too much. We get some interactions with the button, but not the initial, hey, Stilgar, this is my friend Gurney. Like that.
This is Gurney Halleck.
Yeah. We don't get that interaction.
A rolling ugly man.
And Paul specifically says, like, you are two people that I want you to be friends.
Now kiss.
Yeah, right. He's like, because there's tension between them. You know, sure. They're two strong-willed leaders of men with opposing viewpoints on things. So there's going to be tension.
Kith.
We get that played out a lot more in the book.
Yeah.
The book tone kind of shifts from Paul and Stilgar and Chani to Paul and Gurney and Jessica at this point, which we will talk about much later in the movie.
Did they
even meet in the movie?
Who?
Do we have a big reunion scene between Gurney and Jessica in the movie?
No. Fuck. No, the whole Leto, Jessica, Gurney love triangle thing, which is really more just Gurney on the outside going, oh, doesn't exist.
Well, and I'm talking about like forgive me, I haven't seen the rest of the movie in a long time, but him thinking that Jessica betrayed Leto.
That's nowhere in this.
Oh my God. That's so important. And this is another thing, like they're cutting shit out left and right from mm-hmm. this movie at this point. I think you're going to find that my enjoyment of the movie is decreasing as we go on.
We talked about this a few weeks ago when we were starting to talk about the debriefing from Fade Rotha's seduction and how a lot of the decisions that were made about what is and isn't in the movie are really going to start compounding. And the concerns that I had about where that's going to, you know, be in the future of these movies.
Yeah. So I think we're going to see that on paper in our Shai Hulud scores going forward.
Yeah. And we don't get any, you know, speaking of things that are, you know, cut from the movie, like, we don't have any of the Thufir Hawat stuff with the Harkonnens later on. Like, there's so much that's pulled. And I understand that if they'd kept it all in, this movie would be, you know, 4-hour parts.
Fine.
Fine by me. Just give me an extended edition.
Yeah, right.
Anyways, we've bitched about that enough. And we are,
we don't need an extended minute.
No.
Cool. Yeah, that's all I got for this. I'll have more soapbox to get on later in the week. Yeah, anything from Art and Soul from your end?
Nope.
Okay, cool.
Well, I think that's going to be it for today. As always, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are at DuneMinute.com on Blue Sky, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back tomorrow with a Thursday episode to start rounding this week out.
All right. See you then.
See you later.